Kitty. Chapter 38. That afternoon, Kitty walked past the Druid's coffee house 3 times. On the first 2 occasions, she saw nothing and no one of interest. But on the third, her luck changed. Behind a gaggle of excitable European tourists, who took up several outlying tables, she discerned the calm figure of Mr. Hopkins, sitting quietly on his own and stirring his espresso with a spoon. He seemed engrossed in his occupation, absently adding sugar cube after sugar cube to the dark black mix, but he never touched a drop. For a long time Kitty watched him from the shadows of the statue in the centre of the square. As always, Mr. Hopkins' face was bland and quite expressionless. Kitty found it impossible to read what it was thinking. Her betrayal by her parents had left Kitty more exposed than ever, friendless and alone, and a second hungry night in the cellar had convinced her of the need to speak with the one ally she had any hope of finding. Nick, she firmly believed, would have gone deep into hiding, but Mr. Hopkins, always at one remove from the rest of the resistance, might still be approachable. And here, sure enough, he was, waiting in the appointed place. Yet Kitty still hung back, racked with uncertainty. Perhaps it was not strictly Mr. Hopkins' fault that the raid had gone so badly wrong. Perhaps none of the old documents he had studied had mentioned Gladstone's servant. Nevertheless, Kitty could not help but associate his careful advice with the terrible outcome in the tomb. Mr. Hopkins had introduced them to the unknown benefactor. He had helped orchestrate the whole scheme. At the very least, his strategy had been woefully lacking. At worst, he had recklessly endangered them all. But with the others gone, and the magicians on her heels, Kitty had few options remaining. At last, she stepped out from behind the statue and crossed the cobbles to Mr. Hopkins' table. Without greeting, she pulled out a chair and sat down. Mr. Hopkins looked up. His pale grey eyes appraised her. His spoon made little scratching noises against the edges of the cup as he stirred. Kitty stared at him impassively. A bustling waiter approached. Kitty made a cursory order and allowed him to depart. She did not say anything. Mr. Hopkins withdrew the spoon, tapped it on the cup's rim, and laid it carefully on the table. "I heard the news," he said abruptly. "I've been looking for you the last day and more." Kitty uttered a mirthless laugh. "You're not the only one." "Let me say at once." Mr. Hopkins broke off as the waiter reappeared, set a milkshake and an iced bun before Kitty with a flourish, and departed. "Let me say at once how dreadfully sorry I am. It is an appalling tragedy." He paused. Kitty looked at him. "If it is any consolation, my informant was profoundly upset." "Thank you," Kitty said. "It isn't. The information we had, and which we shared openly and completely with Mr. Pennyfeather, made no mention of a guardian," Mr. Hopkins continued, imperturbably. "The pestilence, yes, but nothing else. Had we known, we would never, of course, have countenanced such a scheme." Kitty studied her milkshake. She didn't trust herself to speak. All of a sudden, she felt quite sick. Mr. Hopkins watched her for a moment. "Are all the others—" he began, then stopped. "Are you the only one?"
"I would have thought," Kitty said bitterly, "that with an information network as sophisticated as yours, you would know by now." She sighed. "Nick survived too."
"Ah, really? Good, good. And where is Nick?"
"I have no idea, and I don't care.
He ran while the others fought." "Ah, I see." Mr. Hopkins toyed with his spoon again. Kitty stared at her lap. She realized now that she did not know what to ask of him, that he was as nonplussed as she was. It was no good. She was quite alone.
"It is, of course, inconsequential now," Mr. Hopkins began, and something in his tone made Kitty look up at him sharply. "Given the nature of the tragedy that has taken place, it is inconsequential and irrelevant, of course, but I suppose, what with the unexpected dangers you encountered, and the misfortune of losing so many of your admirable companions, that you did not manage to bring anything of value out of the tomb?" This statement was so rambling and circuitous that it immediately had the opposite effect to what its cautious speaker intended. Kitty's eyes widened in disbelief. Her brows slowly lowered into a frown. "You're right," she said crisply. "It is irrelevant." She ate the iced bun in two mouthfuls and took a sip of her milkshake. Mr. Hopkins began stirring his coffee again. "But then nothing was taken," he prompted. "You were unable?" His voice trailed off. When Kitty had sat down at the table, she had had the vague intention of mentioning the staff to Mr. Hopkins. It was, after all, of no use to her, and it was possible that the benefactor who had wanted it for his collection might be prepared to give her some payment in return. Money for survival was now uppermost on her mind. She had assumed, under the circumstances, that Mr. Hopkins would draw a decent line under the whole business. She had not expected to hear him pressing her so openly for booty from the hall. She thought of Anne, death hard on their trail in the darkened nave, agonizing about dropping her bag of treasures. Kitty's lips became a hard line. "We loaded up with the contents of the tomb," she said, "but we couldn't escape. Perhaps Nick managed to get something out. I don't know." Mr. Hopkins' pale eyes studied her. "But you, yourself, you took nothing?"
"I dropped my bag."
"Ah, of course. I see.
I had the cloak in it, among other things. You'll have to apologize most profusely to your informant. That was one of the objects he wanted, wasn't it?"
The man made a non-committal gesture. "I don't recall. I don't suppose you happen to know what became of Gladstone's staff, do you? I believe he did have his eyes on that."
"I imagine that was left behind."
"Yes. Only there was no mention of it being located in the Abbey, nor any sign of it in the skeleton's possession as it travelled about London."
"Nick took it, then."
"I don't know.
What does it matter? It's not valuable, is it, according to you?"
Kitty spoke casually, but she was watching the other's face as she did so. He shook his head. "No, quite so. My informant will be disappointed, that is all. He did so have his heart set on it, and he would have paid lavishly to have it in his hands."
"We're all of us disappointed," Kitty said, "and most of us are dead. He can live with it."
"Yes." Mr. Hopkins tapped his fingers against the tablecloth. He appeared to be thinking. "Well," he said brightly, "what of you, Kitty? What are your plans now? Where are you staying?"
"I don't know. I'll think of something."
"Do you require help? Somewhere to stay?"
"No, thank you. It would be better if we stayed out of each other's way. The magicians have traced my family. I don't want to put you or your informant at any risk."
Nor did Kitty wish to associate herself any longer with Mr. Hopkins. His evident unconcern at her colleague's death had startled her. Now she wished to be as far removed from him as possible.
"In fact," she pushed her chair back, "I should probably leave now."
"Your concern does you credit. I obviously wish you continued fortune. Before you go, however—" Mr. Hopkins scratched his nose, as if wondering how to phrase something a little difficult. "I think perhaps you should hear something I've learned from one of my sources. It affects you quite closely." Kitty paused in the act of rising.
"Me?"
"I'm afraid so. I heard this little more than an hour ago. It is very secret. Most of the government don't know about it themselves. One of the magicians hunting for you, his name is John Mandrake, I believe, has been researching into your past. He has learned that some years back a Kathleen Jones appeared at the judicial courts charged with assault."
"So?"
Kitty kept her face still, but her heart was suddenly beating fast.
"That was a long time ago."
"Indeed. Going through the record of the trial, he discovered that you had launched an unprovoked attack on a senior magician for which you were fined. He regards this as one of the first attacks by the resistance."
"Ridiculous!" Kitty exploded in fury. "It was an accident. We had no idea."
"Furthermore," Mr. Hopkins went on, "he knows that you did not launch this attack alone." Kitty sat very still.
"What? He doesn't think—"
"Mr. Mandrake believes, whether rightly or wrongly is perhaps beside the point, that your friend—what was his name now? Jacob something?
Herneck. Jacob Herneck.
That's it. He believes Master Herneck is associated with the Resistance, too.
That's ridiculous.
Even so, at some point this morning he sent his demon to take your friend away for questioning. Oh, dear. I thought it might upset you. It took Kitty a few seconds to gather herself. When she spoke, it was haltingly.
But I haven't even seen Jacob for years. He knows nothing.
Mr. Mandrake will doubtless discover as much, eventually.
Kitty's head spun. She tried to gather her thoughts. Where have they taken him? Is it the tower?
I hope, my dear, that you aren't thinking of doing anything rash, Mr. Hopkins murmured. Mr. Mandrake is considered one of the strongest of the young magicians. A talented boy, one of the Prime Minister's favourites. It would not be advisable.
Kitty forced herself not to scream.
Every moment that they delayed, Jacob might be being tortured. Demons, worse than the skeleton, might be surrounding him, goading him with their claws. And he was wholly innocent. He had nothing to do with her at all. What a fool she was! Her reckless actions over the last few years had endangered someone for whom she would once have given up her life.
I would try to forget young Herneck, Mr. Hopkins was saying. You can do nothing.
Please, she said. Is it the Tower of London?
As a matter of fact, it is not. That would be the ordinary way of things. But I think Mandrake is trying to do things quietly by himself, to get one up on rivals in the government. He has abducted your friend in secret, and taken him to a safe house for questioning. It is unlikely to be heavily guarded, but there will be demons.
I have met Mandrake, Kitty interrupted him fiercely. She was leaning forward, urgently now, knocking against the milkshake glass, which jerked sideways, slopping liquid onto the cloth.
I have met him, defied him, and walked away without a backward glance. If this boy hurts Jacob, she said, if he hurts him in any way at all, believe me, Mr. Hopkins, I will kill him with my own hands. Him and any demon who stands in my path.
Mr. Hopkins raised his palms off the table and lowered them. It was a gesture that might have meant anything.
Once again, Kitty said, do you know where this safe house is?
The pale grey eyes regarded her for a time, then blinked.
Yes, he said blandly.
I do know the address. I can give it to you.